Welcome to the Independent Kiwi Show. I'm your host, Paul Carruthers, and this week we're going to be talking about the fear of disapproval and how the fear of disapproval is creating what many perceive to be apathy. And I want to pick this subject apart in the show so that our listeners can get a better understanding of why I think it is that many people out there are passionate and concerned about what's happening in our society, but they're basically too afraid to sort of put their name to anything, or it manifests itself in all sorts of behaviours, like they won't click like on contentious issues on Facebook, or they won't sign petitions, or they don't want to be seen to be sort of causing trouble or inviting the attention of the authorities. All these sorts of behaviours that a lot of activists are very, very painfully aware of, that we witness on a day-to-day basis amongst our friends and our colleagues and in the wider community. So I want to talk about the fear of disapproval and how that manifests itself and how it affects people's behavior. Now, the fear of disapproval is so endemic in society. It's so ingrained in the modern psyche, in the human psyche, certainly in the Western world. And how it plays itself out is as I've just described. It plays itself out in approval seeking. It's in other words, it's a reverse opposite behavior. You're afraid of disapproval, so a lot of people actually go out of their way to seek approval from other people. So a good example of that, a very simple example, is when someone says to you, "How are you?" and you feel like shit. But you say, "I'm fine," because you don't want to burden the other person. You don't want to earn the other person's disapproval. You don't want them thinking badly about you. So you just tell a lie. And so on it goes. And the lie just gets bigger and bigger and bigger. And in the end, that lie actually starts taking over people's personalities. And this is what we see every day. This is one of the biggest single causes of frustration in human relationships, in my experience. It's where people know that the person they're talking to is not really telling them the truth. They're not really being honest about their feelings. But they can't quite put their finger on, you know, they can't get an anchor point to sort of jump in there and say, you know, "Are you really fine? Are you really okay? Because that the look on your face just didn't match your words." Now, that is a classic example of how the fear of disapproval plays itself out. And that's what I want to really pick apart in this show. So a good example of what I'm trying to say, a country that really... where the fear of disapproval is so prevalent in society that it's actually quite disturbing, would be countries would be England, Australia, and New Zealand. Not so much in America, and there's a good reason why. In America, America is a very much an outward-looking culture. It's a very brash, kind of unafraid, let's get out there and just give it a go, and whatever will be kind of culture. And in that culture, parents tend to really dote on their children. And that's the fundamental difference between countries like America and Australia and New Zealand. Okay? Parents in America are not afraid to shower their children with love. Now, yes, that can manifest itself in the form of quite narcissistic people in society, and there's no shortage of them, and I understand that. But generally speaking, kids don't need to, they don't have to earn love in the United States, generally speaking. Right. So, I mean, in any country, kids grow up in dysfunctional homes with really angry, sort of nasty parents. I understand all that. But generally speaking, the concept of showering your kids with approval and really lifting them up and loving them and actively loving them and being seen to actively love them in the United States, it's just part of their culture. Whereas in New Zealand, we and Australia and the United Kingdom, we have this very Victorian kind of psyche. I mean, in Australia and New Zealand particularly, what have you actually got there? You've got Victorian England transplanted itself in Australia in the case of convicts, in New Zealand the case of people coming here voluntarily in the hope of starting a new life back in the sort of 19th century. And so in the 18th and 19th century. So in those two cultures, what you have is where Victorian England transplanted itself into these new lands and then colonized them, but they remained largely isolated from the outside world for a long, long time, certainly until the early 20th century. And as a result of that, the whole Victorian sort of disapproval, I call it the thou shalt not mentality is still very, very prevalent in the New Zealand and Australian psyche and culture. And New Zealand and Australia are very, very disapproving societies. And parental disapproval syndrome, Google this, parental disapproval syndrome. Parental disapproval syndrome basically means where kids are born, you get married and you have children, and your kids have to earn respect. They have to earn love. So we have a very tough love environment from day one. It's only just now in the current generation, maybe the last year, probably this generation and the one before, that we're starting to sort of soften, certainly in New Zealand and I think Australia as well, where it's becoming more ex widely accepted that it's probably not a good idea to bash your kids unless unless you want to sort of teach them that that's the way to solve things, and that maybe just maybe showing your kids love, right, is probably a wise thing to do if you actually want them to grow up with a healthy concept of themselves, right? Whereas in America, that's actually been just a natural thing that you do, and it's been that way for quite a long time. And a perfect example of this is a really good example is this. If you take a TV camera crew to a shopping mall in the United States, and you just pick a family, any family coming out of a shop, right, and they might have a 7-year-old son and a 12-year-old daughter or whatever, and you stop them and you ask them, "How's your day been, son?" That kid will not refer to their parents before answering the question. They will just look dead straight into the camera. 9 times out of 10, that kid has enough self-confidence to look dead straight into the camera, and they will just say, "Well, we had a great day. We went to this shop and that shop, and mom did this and dad did that, and all the rest of it." And they'll just answer the question, no hesitation. In New Zealand, and a lot of New Zealand and Australian listeners will, I think, identify with this. If you do the same exercise with a New Zealand family coming out of a shopping mall, and you go up to that 7-year-old boy or that 12-year-old girl or whatever, and you with the camera and the microphone, and you say, "How's your experience been today?" They will hesitate. They will look at the camera like possums in the headlights of a car. In other words, stunned. They will probably look left up towards their mother and then right up towards their father, waiting for approval or permission to speak. And unless they're really, really confident. Okay? So that is the fundamental difference in the culture and the psyche. And that fear of disapproval is so ingrained in the New Zealand psyche, particularly, and I think again Australia as well, and the United Kingdom, that how it manifests itself in terms of dealing with social issues, dealing with corruption in government, dealing with abuse of power, dealing, confronting all of these issues that are increasing In all of our countries, we are all witnessing increasing abuses of police power, increasing abuses of political power, increasing abuses of financial power, increasing corruption on the part of politicians and corporations. All of these kind of really endemic issues that many, many people are either publicly or privately upset about, certainly concerned about. These things are dealt with in different ways in different countries, but generally speaking, whether it be the United States, whether it be New Zealand, whether it be Australia, whether it be England, or any of these other generally more Western countries, we have this thing in our culture where we hesitate, we stop, we think, how will I look? What will people think of me? I don't want to be seen to be this way. I don't, and so we have this voice. Right, it's a filter. And that's not necessarily a bad thing, but it becomes a bad thing when we allow these abuses to continue and to grow and to become more and more endemic and to sort of reach further and further into our lives and cause us increasing discomfort, and we just don't feel like we can actually stand up to them because we're worried about how it might make us look, or we're worried about inviting trouble upon ourselves. And this has to stop. This has to stop. We simply cannot afford to go on like this. We have to stand up to what's going on, or we are absolutely doomed. We cannot do this anymore. Now, we've just witnessed this. I don't mean any disrespect in what I'm about to say, but we've just witnessed this in New Zealand with the Pike River families. God bless those people. My heart goes out to them. It really does. Now, for those of you international listeners, the Pike River families are the families of the 29 miners who died in the Pike River mine explosions in 2011. And those families have endured 3 years now of waiting for the New Zealand government and the mining company itself, which was effectively owned by the New Zealand government, given that two New Zealand government departments were the major shareholders in it. They have been waiting for the New Zealand government to re-enter that mine to recover the bodies of their men. And we have sat here as a nation for 3 years and waited and waited and waited for the government to get off its backside and develop the courage necessary to go into that mine. And all we have heard for 3 years is excuses. And it has been absolutely excruciating listening to those families, watching those families, experiencing those families on the news, going through their grief, their pain, their anguish, their hurt, because they have been betrayed by the government of this country. And the remainder of the public in this country have sat in silence and waited and waited and waited with them for the government to do something about getting those bodies out of their mind. And all we have heard is excuse after excuse after excuse as to why they can't do it. And it's become such an issue that the majority of people in New Zealand, either publicly or privately, now believe that there's something very fishy about this situation, that this that it appears to be that the legal liability on the part of the government for the safety issues around why that explosion happened, is the driving force, the driving reason behind their refusal to go back into the mine and recover the bodies. Now, this is a profoundly ridiculous situation. If you put this in context, if it was an aeroplane that went down in the most rugged, remote part of New Zealand and it posed significant risk to the rescue personnel, the recovery personnel, to get the wreckage and the bodies out of that area, no expense or effort would be spared to pull those bodies out. And yet, we have sat here for 3 years and listened to the New Zealand government and the mining company make excuse after excuse after excuse as to why they can't go in there. And it started to reek. The whole issue has started to reek of them hiding evidence. They're basically stalling the whole issue because they don't want the evidence to be revealed by going into that mine and picking apart what actually happened. And that's what most people now believe. But that's not the core issue of the show. The core issue of the show is why those families have. I have watched them, and I'm going to make some observations. Those families have torn themselves inside out. I've watched them do this on television. It's just excruciating watching the pain that these people are obviously going through, the just agony that this situation has caused them, the gut-wrenching sense of unfairness that this situation has created within them and for them. And the whole of New Zealand has had to sit there and watch this. And I have sat there so many times and thought, I've literally spoken to my television when I've watched their spokesperson. And I've yelled at him and said, for God's sake, say what you really think. Stop saying what you think is acceptable or will be acceptable. Stop saying what is politically correct. Stop saying what the lawyers are telling you to say and say how you really feel. And it's become obvious to those who care enough to watch what's going on here that that's exactly what's happening. These families, they want to vent. They want to say, you know what? We're being absolutely screwed over here. The government's lying. They are lying to us. They are lying to New Zealand. It's obvious that that's what they want to say, but they can't quite bring themselves to say it because of the thought that it might invite a lot of disapproval from the people who support the politicians who've been front-footing this thing and saying, oh, well, you know, there's safety issues and we don't want to put another life at risk by going in there. Even though we've had expert after expert after expert fly into this country and say, I don't know what the hell the government's on about. I would have gone in there right from day one. There's no reason why these bodies can't be recovered. This is starting to stack up like a joke. Now, the families know this, New Zealanders know this, but we all have to sit there night after night after night and watch the politicians make excuse after excuse after excuse to the point where these families are absolutely bursting with pain. Their pain is visible, it's palpable, you can feel it with them. But still, they sit there and they say, well, you know, yes, it's very unfair. It's just so unfair. But they don't say why. Because there's this filter that says, if I say this, it's going to look like that. And then all hell's going to be invited upon me if I do that. Well, guess what? My advice to those families is you should have been saying this right from day one. You should have been standing up and screaming from the top of your lungs and going, this is wrong, this is unfair, do something about it. Now, and there would not have been, it would have been a very, very foolish New Zealander indeed, who would have dared to attack those families for criticizing the politicians and the decision makers behind the decision not to go back in and recover the bodies of their loved ones. Now, that is a classic example of how the fear of disapproval plays itself out in situations like this. I watched the same thing. I defended a guy in New Zealand who was put through a very unjust situation. It was a very, very, very public situation. And this guy was a finance company owner, and and he had a lot of investors. And most people in New Zealand feel or believe or know that what this man was put through was basically unfair. He was put into a very Kafka-esque type of unjust situation by the government. And of course, naturally, the vast majority of people just sat on their hands and played the whole, oh, well, I'll just sit on the fence and wait for the evidence. I won't actually say anything, even though I kind of feel really uncomfortable about what they're doing to him. I won't really say anything because, I don't want to be seen to be sort of upsetting the apple cart. And I don't want to invite the disapproval of the authorities. And, I don't want the police banging my door down. So I'll just sort of sit here and say, but here's the interesting thing. This guy had 400 investors. And all of these people's funds were frozen as a result of the government's actions. And the whole thing was done completely unlawfully. Basically, what happened was a politician accused this guy of fraud before they even started any investigation so they could shut his companies down, seize his assets from him without even getting a court order. And they did this all through the headlines, and they basically sold all of his assets on the open market to their mates, which has been proven beyond any doubt now, at pennies in the dollar, 25 cents in the dollar, right? And we watched this play out for 2 or 3 years, and this guy just got hanged out to dry. And the New Zealand public just sat on their hands. But here's the interesting thing. This guy had 400 investors who were affected by all of this. Their funds were frozen along with his, and they couldn't get their money out. And statutory managers were appointed, and these guys were charging huge, huge fees to dig up the evidence against this guy, right? And they kept putting stuff into the headlines, going, oh, he's a crook, oh, he's a fraud. Well, ironically, after 4 years, it was proven that all of his investors got 99.37% of all their money back. So every single word that every politician and private sector insolvency practitioner who was appointed by those politicians to rip this guy's life to bits and sell all of his assets, every single word that they spoke has been proven to be a lie. Absolutely every allegation they made against him has been proven to be a lie. 4 years down the track. But that is still not my point. My point is those 400 people. Those people were put into that situation. Many of them were elderly. There was their life savings involved in it, and those funds were frozen. Now, I know for a fact that more than five of those people committed suicide as a result of the extreme financial hardship they were placed in by that situation. So you have a situation where a political decision, right, which should have always been put through the courts for judicial approval before they even made the kind of move that they did against this guy. A political decision effectively raped a whole lot of people, just destroyed their lives, put them through abject misery for 3 or 4 years, and those people sat on their hands. Now, I had direct relationships with many of them because I stepped into the middle of this and stood up for this guy, took a very public stand against what the government was doing, because it was just wrong on every level what they were doing. It was just pure cronyism and abuse of political power for personal material gain. And the personal material gains of the friends of the politicians who made the decision. But those investors, they were given, here's the thing, they were given incontrovertible, irrefutable proof that the actions that were taken against the guy who they'd invested all their money with and themselves by proxy were completely unlawful. Completely unlawful. These people were given the evidence and they did nothing. They did absolutely nothing. They sat on the fence and they said, and they just made excuse after excuse after excuse why they couldn't do anything about it. And that is exactly how the fear of disapproval plays itself out in situations like this, because they didn't want to be seen to be rocking the boat. And I'm saying to you, the purpose of this show tonight is to talk, is to say to all of you people out there, that kind of behavior, that mentality, that psyche, that fear has to stop. It has to stop. If you want to live in a better society, we have to start standing up for what we believe in. We're just going to take a break, and then we're going to come back, and I'm going to be talking with Vinnie Eastwood about how we can encourage people to overcome their fear of disapproval. Welcome back to the Independent Kiwi Show. I'm your host, Paul Carruthers, and now we're talking with Vinnie Eastwood about how we can encourage people to overcome their fear of disapproval and actually stand up for what it is that they believe in. Well, hey, Vinnie.
I would encourage people to be like me and just kind of go with the flow and get used to being a disappointment to yourself and actually have fun with it, you know?
Yeah. I mean, here's the thing. You've got all these people walking around, mate, worrying about what other people think about them. And guess what? Everybody else is walking around worrying about what other people think about them. That's the ridiculous part about this whole thing.
I know.
It's just
an absolute joke. It's like, bro, I don't need you to disapprove of me. I know I'm a narcissistic douchebag. What of it? You've got to own your flaws. And that's the thing.
Absolutely.
Be proud of them.
Mate, I'm the most arrogant, opinionated, self-obsessed son of a bitch I know. I can tell you that. So they can stand up and they can call me names. They can call me all of that stuff. And I'm going to laugh because I've had everything said to me and everything done to me. That's how I overcame my fear of disapproval, because I stood up and I confronted it. And I let people abuse me. I let them call me names. I went through all of that crap defending Alan Hubbard, and I don't care anymore what people think of me. And I'll tell you the reason why, Vinny, because the issues at stake, the principles at stake, the issues affecting society are too important. They are simply becoming too important to care about whether someone doesn't like what we're saying. Guess what? If they don't like it, tough.
Yeah, I was a bit of a dick to a few people on Facebook today, and I go away to the kitchen to like have something to eat after discussing with people, and I thought to myself, oh my God, I've become a bit of a wanker. That's awesome.
I wouldn't go that far, mate. I don't think you're a wanker.
No. I said a bit of a wanker. You know, when you kind of get caught in the middle of it, I'm that kind. You know,
I think you're growing some balls, and you're less reluctant. I've watched you over the years, Vinny, and you've become less reluctant to say what you truly think and truly feel, because I think you've developed an instinctive understanding of what's at stake if you don't. If you understand what I'm saying,
I was just talking to this guy who's like a numerology expert. You know how these people who can like actually tell a shockingly large amount about your personality just by running your name and running the numbers and the time you've been born and the association personality with it, that kind of thing. It was like stunningly accurate. And one of the things that actually comes to mind that he said to me was that you're a person who finds it very, very difficult to hold your tongue, and you have to kind of speak or you can't get out of it. And he's absolutely right, because there's something inside, and when there's something inside that doesn't get out, that is truthful, it turns into a lie based upon your own denial of who you really are. And
That's
if
right.
you deny who you really are for long enough, you forget who you really are.
That's exactly right. And that's why you shut down. What it is you shut down. You become whatever it is you think other people want you to be. And that is a form of spiritual death, mate. That is just, you become like a, I don't like the word zombie, but you just live in Never Never Land when you do that. Everything's just, that's when you become the kind of person where someone says, how are you doing? And you feel like shit and you go, fine.
Okay. I actually went to a party one time, and Chuck asked me, "So Vinny, what have you been up to?" And I go, "Do you want the short answer or the long answer?" And she goes, "The short answer." I go, "I'm good." You know, because obviously most people don't actually care. They don't actually want to know. They're just doing it because it's quote unquote polite. And, you know, at the end of the day, bro, if you can't actually have a real conversation about something that matters with somebody, then stop talking to them kind of altogether has been my instinct. And I've never had cause to regret it.
No, me neither. Well, yeah, no, me neither. That's actually right. I mean, and increasingly so. I've become increasingly more direct and more, well, actually, as I discovered that I mean, this is all, I'm having this conversation with you, and this show is about what it's about, because I used to have a fear of disapproval. I used to be the most hardest working people pleaser, I think, probably on the face of this planet. So I've made this journey. And I can tell you now from personal experience, if you live for the approval of other people, you will end up in unbelievable pain. And I'll tell you the reason why. Because A, they don't care. They don't care anyway. That's the ridiculous part about it, is that there's a lot of people out there who are doing what I used to do. Many, many people worrying like hell about what other people think about them. And guess what? They don't care. Everybody's too consumed with their own lives. What makes you think people are going to stop whatever they're doing when you walk in a room and go, I think I'm just going to observe that person for a while and just pick them apart? Well, guess what? Unless they've got more than a passing sexual interest in you, it's pretty unlikely that they're going to do that. And yet, you've got all these people walking around obsessed with the idea that everybody's sort of looking at them and thinking about them. Guess what? They're not.
Yeah,
Okay, so
you kind of gonna get
that's
it
one.
over yourself in that regard, and it's about justifying yourself. And a friend of mine, after I got my YouTube channel deleted,
Sorry,
Paul,
yeah.
after I got my YouTube channel deleted, my friend John Eisen tells me, "Vinny, you no longer have to justify yourself to anyone."
That's right.
It's like that's the approval rate,
And
like.
here's the thing, you never should have in the first place, mate. That's one thing I absolutely refuse to do now, is to justify myself to anybody.
Well, in fact, that goes on to my next point that I've got down here to mention is I've turned my ability to put up with people's invalid criticism and not wanting to listen to me and not giving a frack about me into a social guillotine. You either start giving a frack right away and I'll start caring about you know, that kind of thing. It's pretty open, it's pretty mutual. But if you're some sort of form of dick, social guillotine, it's off, it's blocked, and the scum
That's
is
right,
gone.
mate. And I'll tell you the why, because we're running out of time, right?
Well, can I define that though? Because I've said for a long time, if I come up with a saying like years ago, is that there's 7 billion people on Earth. Don't waste your time with people who don't inspire you, encourage you, or help you in any way. Okay, life is too short to handle other people's baggage, and those people who aren't helping you in any way, they're going to betray you. There's a great saying: the problem with loyalty to a cause is that the cause will always betray you, and people have shown loyalty to the judgment of the cause of others. You see,
That's right.
and
A
so
good
doing.
example, of that is the way people put politicians on pedestals and refuse to hear a bad thing about them, in spite of the fact that those politicians often end up doing bloody awful things, which become increasingly exposed, and the people who supported them get given more and more evidence that they've made a mistake, and they just dig their heels in and refuse to believe it. And we're seeing that happen all through the Western world now, and it's just getting ridiculous. That's what I meant when I said we're running out of time. Now, here's the thing. The purpose of this particular show is to confront all of those people out there who refuse to click like on anything because it's politically contentious and they're worried about the SIS or the GCSB or the CIA or the NSA or
I
the
treat them
ASI
like
or God knows whatever,
it's
watching what
triage,
they're
bro.
doing. Yeah, that's right. My advice to those people is give it up. Because if you don't start standing up, the thing that makes me angry about those people, right, who refuse to get involved in anything that's sort of politically contentious, they don't want to be seen to, and this is the core issue here, is they don't want to be seen to be participating in anything like that, just in case, you know, the tanks come rolling down the street and they start singling out all the dissenters. Well, guess what? Those politicians, everything is done by polls. They live for more approval than you ever will in 100 bloody lifetimes. So do the math. If more of you stand up and click like on things, if more of you comment on things, if more of you are seen to be participating in these issues, those politicians will absolutely shit themselves. So the reason why we have this standoff in the Western world is because the majority of people are still going, oh, you know, I'm worried about how I'll look if I do that. I'm worried that I'll invite the sort of negative attention of the authorities and all the rest of it. If you don't add your name to it, then you deserve to lose your rights because you're just stupid, right? The equation is incredibly simple. Everything in politics is poll-driven. They are terrified of your disapproval, right? So the reason why they're getting away with what they're getting away with is because the number of people, the people who are willing to stand up who go, hang on, what you're doing is disgusting. And here's the thing. Let's just clarify what I'm saying here. We have a situation in the world now where in certainly New Zealand, Australia, and United States and England and all these other countries, we have the situation where the majority of people, in my opinion, and I'm pretty sure I'm correct here, the majority of people are growing increasingly concerned about abuses of political power, all sorts of abuses of corruption and the reach of corporatism into politics and the effect that's having on society and you know the marginalization of the poor and the growing divide between the rich, all these bloody issues we're facing, right? And what we have is the situation, those bloody politicians are running rings around us, they are laughing at us, and I'll tell you how they're getting away with it. They're getting away with it because the number of people who are willing to stand up, the number of people who are willing to put their name to something, like just even liking something on Facebook, or commenting on something on Facebook, or registering their disapproval of those politicians' conduct, right, is still in the few. So those politicians know that. Their advisors know that. The people that do the polls for them know that. And they are absolutely taking the piss out of you people because you won't stand up. So if you stand up, if you reverse the situation and the politicians woke up tomorrow morning or another day, and all of a sudden it went from 33% or 25% of the population was unhappy about something to 67% because everybody decided, bugger it, I've had enough. Guess what? They'd shit themselves and the world would change overnight. Now this is, you've just seen the evidence. You saw it happen with Israel. They ripped apart Gaza, absolutely raped the place, started murdering innocent, it was just pure genocide. Everyone knows it, and only an idiot would deny it. So we had an unprecedented situation where people who wouldn't normally say something said, oh, that's it, nah, that's just too far, no way, enough, right? Guess what? That's why it didn't even last 2 months and it all went suddenly quiet. Now, you can argue the semantics and go, oh, yes, but Israel's still doing nasty things to Palestine. All this. Okay, fair enough, okay? But nowhere near as bad as the just flat-out carpet bombing and just decimating the population. That, at least, has stopped. And why did it stop? Because an overwhelming majority of people said, no, enough. So you've been given the evidence that your voice can and will count. But you have to come out of the woodwork. You have to come out of hiding. You have to come out from behind your fear. Because it is your fear that is holding the world back.
And I think the Milgram experiments are quite an interesting one, and I say experiments because there were actually more than one. For those of you who are unaware, the Milgram experiment was done at Harvard University. They had a dude in a white lab coat and a person in an electrified chair, or an allegedly electrified chair, and a test subject, okay, who was commanded by the person in the white lab coat to electrocute the person on the other side of the screen who gave incorrect answers to a set of questions. And the goal of the experiment was to find out how naturally people would respond to an authority figure giving them an order to kill. This was to elucidate how the atrocities in Nazi Germany happened, etc., etc. So, experiment number one is the most highly publicized one. Most people don't know about the other two. What that experiment proved is that 9 out of 10 people will deliver the lethal dose of electricity to that person on the other side of the glass just because a Harvard person with a white lab coat told you to. Interesting, eh? Experiment number two was when they had that person, that same test subject, stand behind another screen glass, and they are shown a person delivering a lethal shock to the other person behind the glass. And they found that 9 out of 10 of those people who witness another person committing atrocities that the authority figure told them to would refuse to deliver the lethal shock themselves. And the third experiment, and this is kind of the one that I draw a lot of inspiration for, was same situation as the second experiment. The subject is actually observing another person delivering a lethal charge, so to speak, but this person that they're observing doesn't actually deliver a lethal charge at all, and in fact stands up to the authority specifically, right? And what this found was that 100% of people who witnessed a person refusing to commit an atrocity that an authority told them to commit would also refuse. Now, this comes into the crowd psychology and mentality, and Suzanne Peisel from Occupy Corporatism does great work on this subject. And what this says to me is that if you're in a crowded room and you want to say something and you know that it's really, really on your mind, chances are it's actually on the minds of many, many others in that room as well.
That's right.
If only you had the courage to stand and speak it. Now, myself personally, I have that kind of personality, but before going on stage, every actor, every performer gets a rush. There is that kind of adrenaline pumping through your system. It's like a fight or flight, like you're tensing up. You've got to fight through that. You have to say something. You have to stand up to authority, and you have to be seen to do it specifically by those around you.
Because if we don't, the consequences, this is what you have to consider, the consequences of not doing it, right? My fear is, my concern is that the consequences of not standing up, of not expressing how we truly feel about what's going to, now here's the thing, listen to those words carefully. The consequences of not expressing how you truly feel, not what you think, or not what you think you should be feeling, or not what you think you should be saying, but what you truly feel, the consequences of not expressing that are going to become increasingly dire if you don't. That is not a threat. It is not a prediction. It is an absolute promise, because we live in a universe that is ruled by cause and effect, right? And and people need to understand that. It seems to me that a lot of people that don't want to add their voice to anything, or don't want to be seen to be causing any trouble, or don't want to invite the negative attention, or the disapproval of the authorities. It appears to me that a lot of those people seem to think that, deep down inside, it's other people that die. Other people die. Bad things happen to other people. They don't actually happen. If I'm just a good person and I don't sort of say how I truly feel, even if it's driving me nuts, if I just sort of keep a straight face on and be pleasant and don't make any waves and don't stand up to authority and don't this and don't that, as long as I sort of like behave within this incredibly narrow bandwidth and sort of live half a life and don't ever take any risks, then, oh, you know, maybe, just maybe I won't actually die. Well, guess what? You're going to die anyway. And you have no choice over it. So here's the real question. It's not whether you're going to die or not. Not whether you're going to die like a Palestinian or die like one of the victims of, I don't know, whoever is killing people in the world this week, right? That's not the question. The question is, how are you going to live? How are you living? Not how are you going to die, how are you living? Are you living on your knees in subservience to crap authority? To just heinously bad politicians who just laugh at you and just, oh, just laugh in your face?
Can I step in here? Cause...
are you living in subservience to those people, or are you going to stand up and live on your feet? That's the real question.
When you speak up in a hostile crowd, they will shout you down, okay? And that's basically one of the immutable things. So sometimes you just need to get out just that tiny little thing, a tiny little crack. However,
I will say this. Let's talk about hostile crowds there, Vinny, because you've just tapped into a core fear that a lot of people have. It's that thing of, oh, yeah, but what if I stand up and there's no one standing behind me? Well, guess what? I've had that experience. I've gone out on a limb for other people and the buggers sorted off behind me because they were too – they emailed me and phoned me up.
No, I'm not talking about hold on. You misunderstand because I'm not talking about a crowd that you think might be hostile. I'm talking about a crowd that you know is going to be incredibly hostile, a brainwashed, mind-controlled, useless crowd kind of thing. Like trying to go into a National Party conference, for example, and promote the Labour Party. You know you're going to get no reception.
I don't know where you're going with that, okay? That's not what I'm trying to achieve. What I'm trying to achieve is to encourage people to make them think about why they're not standing up and why they should, okay?
I was just thinking about, like, that's the ultimate test, you know?
I understand that, I don't actually, but what I'm trying to say to you is, right, is that I've experienced firsthand the situation where I've experienced incredible disapproval for going out on a limb and standing up on an issue where no one else stood behind me. So I know what it's like to feel completely isolated and absolutely be the victim of just unbelievable abuse for taking the stand that I did, and sitting there and throughout that whole process and thinking, you bastards. You absolute bastards. Where are you? You're supposed to be behind me. You're supposed to be helping me. And here's the thing. All of those people that I was standing up for would ring me privately. They would email me privately. They would contact me in all sorts of different ways, but it was always privately. And they would take up my time, mate. They would take up my time with all of their stories about how bad the situation was, how bad it was for them, how terrible it was, how much emotional angst and trauma it was causing them. But none of them would get off the fence and actually say something about it. They just kept going, oh, you're the one, you're braver than me, you stand up, you do that, and all the rest of it. Now, here's the thing. None of those people ever needed to go through that situation if only they'd had the courage to stand up with me and say, enough is enough. And this is the core issue that I'm talking about in this show. Do you understand that?
Yeah. I also wanted to talk about the other elements is the technocracy, political science. There's actually a science behind manipulating you into not obeying your instincts. If you think somebody's bullshitting you, the chances are they're probably bullshitting you. We've got like a sixth sense here, and it's kind of your moral duty to obey it and do the right thing, not cower. Right? Because what we're dealing with here, and the reason why we're running out of time, I'm not sure if you're entirely aware of this, Paul, but Project Echelon, it is recording every text message, every cell phone, every word, every phrase, every email, every form of communication known to man. Every single one of us is being categorized, chronicled, and put on a list. My sister said to me, if you're not on a list by some point, at some point already, then there's something frickin' wrong with you, okay? Because really, you've got to go in to a hopeless situation just because it's the right thing to do.
That's right. Right? That's absolutely right.
And that's how you get over your fear. That's how you conquer yourself. Because that's the first enemy that has to go down in order for you to defeat the real enemy, and that's yourself.
That's right. I'll rephrase. I see. To me, when you use the term yourself, to me, I think of your higher self, which is your spiritual being. Well, I think what you need to conquer is your ego, and your ego is the limited you. It's the frightened you. It's the little you. It's the you that sort of sees yourself as an isolated. The ego effectively views your ego views you. It convinces you that you are an isolated, separate being in a hostile universe,
and that you. Oh, sorry. Go ahead. We're coming to the end of the show.
Okay, and that's what the ego does, and the ego is there to protect you and keep you alive. But what's happened is it's got out of control in this world, in most people. In many people anyway, certainly, and it's become and it manifests itself in the form of overprotection.
It's because the ego is now too easy to feed. It's kind of like how a cat gets fat.
That's right. That's exactly right. And so what, in order to actually live fully in the world, in order to be true to yourself and say how you truly feel, you actually need to overcome your ego. The first thing you need to do is understand that your ego is not your enemy, right? It's actually there to keep you alive in a world that can sometimes be a little bit hostile, but generally speaking is nowhere near as hostile as most people think it is, if you understand what I'm saying. So to cap it off, to summarize, what my advice to everybody out there is, if you want to live in a better world, give a voice to your feelings and don't be afraid of what other people think. Don't let your ego convince you that you will die or that, you know, that you're at risk if you actually say how you truly feel. If the worst risk that can happen to you is that one or two people might disapprove or frown about what you're saying, then proportionately speaking, that's bugger all risk. So you're probably better off doing it. But what's happening at the moment is the majority of people are leaving the ones who care more or care the most to hang out to dry. They're the ones that are getting singled out by the politicians and the bad people, you know, the what I call the bad authority. Those people are at risk of being singled out because the majority of people who are just as concerned with them won't give their own feelings a voice. And I'm telling you, the political world you live in the Western world, is so poll-driven, it's unbelievable. If those politicians and their advisors woke up tomorrow morning and saw that there had been a massive swing, right, and that it suddenly wasn't 18% or 12% or 22% of the population whinging and moaning about something, but in fact it was 67% that said, nah, you know, enough is enough. And that 67% is constituted with all you people out there who are sitting there saying and doing nothing. If those politicians saw that you had all added your voice, they would absolutely shit themselves. And the next thing that would happen is you'd see on the news that night that they would literally be standing there going, what do we have to do to sort of like make you people happy? We'll do anything you want, really, as long as you keep paying us and letting us have our positions. And that is what it's all about. So people need to examine their fears and start taking active steps to overcome them if you want to live in a better world. You can't live in a better world if you're not willing to say and do something towards helping achieve it. You can't leave it up to other people to take all the risks on your behalf while you just sit on your hands and say or do nothing, hoping that somebody will come along that you can put up on a pedestal and solve it all for you. You have to add your voice. You have to stand up and you have to be counted, right? That is what this show was all about. This is the Independent Kiwi Show. I'm your host, Paul Carruthers. Thank you for being with us this week. I hope it wasn't too intense for you, but then I don't really care because it's important. What was said was important.